Your name?
Brian Weaver.
Brian Weaver, I'm putting the same 10 questions to each of the candidates for the at-large race for the D.C. Council. Question number one, D.C.'s top income tax bracket begins at $40,000, so someone making $400,000 or $4 million pays the same tax rate as someone making far less. Are you in favor of taxing the district's highest income earners in order to avoid further cuts to safety net services?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of just picking one more category. I would prefer to have three top tier ones. That way you can sort of separate middle income folks from the highest end. So I actually propose from 40, the next one at 120, and then 250, and then 1.5 million.
Question number two, what are your thoughts on former Chancellor Michelle Rhee's so-called school reform?
I just sort of feel like we've, you know, like move along, nothing to see here really. She hasn't been the chancellor for quite some time. Kaya Henderson, I think, is going to be a far better communicator with parents and with communities than Rhee was. I think Rhee sort of, you know, fit a job that Adrian Fenty wanted her to do. I think if she looked like Luca Brasi from The Godfather, people would have understood that she was playing the heavy, I think, for Mayor, who was trying to smash what he sort of viewed as an entrenched system. I think there were some gains that were in there, but I don't know at the overall what expense. I think that most parents felt good that there was actually something going on, but they I'm not sure that they actually looked at what all the net results were. So Michelle Rhee actually has the best line about this, about education reforms, like considering how low our test scores are and like what our, you know, low graduation rate we have. It's a ridiculously long way to go.
Question number three, do you support Walmart's attempt to bring four stores to the District of Columbia?
I'm not a big fan of Walmart. I think that they don't provide livable wages. They normally don't provide any sort of health benefits for workers. Unfortunately, our council for years has not addressed the issue about livable wage laws for big box stores. This is something that should have been handled, you know, three sessions ago. I would have proposed something along the lines of looking at what other jurisdictions like Chicago, Portland, Oregon have done, like essentially requiring the largest sort of big box stores, places that have 90,000 square feet and above, to require livable wage requirements. In sort of a master plan, Walmart is not seeking any sort of government financing. They're not seeking any zoning variances. So there's very little in the current way that they're asking to come, or the way that they're just coming to the District of Columbia, that communities can do other than just protest and sort of like try to cycle a voice. But they're going to claim matter of right on all four of these, and you seem to have open arms out of some of the council members on the council.
Question number four. D.C. taxicab fares are some of the lowest in the country. Would you be in support of making D.C.'s fares competitive with neighboring jurisdictions?
I would like to see a better plan right now. I think that the current medallion system that has been floated is sort of wrought with elements of controversy, just based on the entire taxicab scandal that caught up a number of drivers and the chief of staff of a sitting city council member. I sort of feel that the district has to get its house in order before they can propose, which of the medallion plans. And I want to make sure that it's actually the right one to not drive out the individual, the independents. I think the independents is sort of what makes the DC system unique. I like it that someone can actually raise a family, send somebody to college on owning their own cab. And I don't really like the idea of like there being sort of a consolidation and conglomerate of sort of cornering the market on taxi cab medallions. So I haven't been impressed with the systems that have been there so far. But I do recognize that if you're going to be a small business owner, you definitely want to stay competitive, so I think there has to be a change. I just want them to be vetted better than they've been so far.
Question number five, you kind of answered it, but I'm asking all the candidates. I want to ask you as well. What is your position on the recently introduced taxicab medallion legislation?
My issue with it is that really it just comes from, I sort of view it comes from a place of weakness. I just think it was not particularly well vetted. It was just became immediately tainted because of of the FBI investigation and the allegations in the Councilmember Graham staff. I just want the commission up and running, and have some more open hearings on it. And I don't like the sort of balkanization of the industry. I don't like it when you start suddenly you feel that the Ethiopian and Eritrean drivers are pitting out against Arab drivers, are pitting out against African American owned independents. That just makes me feel very uncomfortable, because it aggresses very quickly into some sort of bad local politics. I want something that's equitable to the larger companies, but also to the smaller ones.
Question number 6. DC council members are the second highest paid city council in the country, according to a report by the Pew Charitable Trust. Yet in addition to their $125,000 council salary, council members are able to earn outside income. If elected, will you commit to foregoing any additional income and stick to just your council salary?
I'd also give up $25,000 from the salary to give to the social safety net. I just think there's so many programs that we've cut, and I sort of think housekeeping begins in your own house. So I'd also be one of the immediately, like, I would really try to find the coalition of the C, if there is one, I don't even know if it exists, of people on the council who sort of believe in good government. And it just muddies the waters when you have council members that have secondary jobs. I think Mary Chase is probably sort of innocuous, but I mean, if GW has some sort of zoning thing that they're coming for, or they're trying to seek district funds, I mean, does that mean she has to recuse herself? I think with Evans and Catania, it's a bit more cloudy. But also, it allows Kwame Brown to accept $45,000 in consultants' fees, and then, you know, and only under pressure from the press did he ever try to disclose what those consultants' fees were. I mean, we just have to move away from that system of government.
Question number 7, what is your position on the HPV vaccine, which is mandated for 6th grade girls in the District of Columbia and Virginia and nowhere else in the U.S.?
I'm sort of split on it. I'm really glad that I think it's important that we actually put that out there. I think there are a lot of health benefits to it. I think that, you know, we have an aversion to best practices, and we often sort of wait and aren't very innovative in our programs and thinking. With that said, I am glad that they're giving the option to people to opt out, and they probably need to do a better program around letting families know that they can opt out of it. I tend to be on the side that the medical research on it, like, it doesn't necessarily have the correlation of what the effects to the vaccine are. I know that a lot of people like to run with that and say, like, you know, these people have died, but in other cases there's been other allergies that have been associated with it. So in that sense, I think it is an important step for reproductive health. It's something that we can actually prevent. I know people aren't feeling comfortable because they're doing it at such a young age, but if parents have the ability to opt out of it and that parents are educated about the option, I feel okay with it.
Question number 8, what is your position on statehood versus voting rights for the District of Columbia?
Statehood, baby. I'm a statehood person. I think, I said this the other night, Democrats really killed this in 1993. We had a majority of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and a president who said that he would sign a statehood bill. And we couldn't get enough Democrats in the House on board with it. And, you know, to me, you really can't make the option to just sort of say that a vote for Eleanor Holmes Norton is enough. The Republicans in 1993 had a counteroffer, which was allow district residents to vote for Senate in Maryland and let Eleanor Holmes Norton vote in the House. We're so far from, like, having that kind of compromise. I think that would be, like, a legitimate compromise where you could sit there and weigh the stakes of, you know, at least having 600,000 residents have a vote for someone in the Senate, even if it's not their primary person. But man, to me, it's just like one vote isn't enough. I mean, the only other direction you could go with is go with Puerto Rico, Guam sort of contingency, and just, like, officially recognize this as a colony and get away with the federal income taxes then.
Question number 9, did you vote for Adrian Fenty in the recent mayoral election?
I did, and I voted for him extremely begrudgingly. And it was, I really went back and forth over it time and time again. And since then, with all of these sort of little scandals that have come up around the Gray administration, which I normally blame on his transition team and not necessarily the mayor, I felt a little bit like, oh, yeah, there was this, some sort of Nirvana period where we had this great mayor and he was leading us down this path of right and righteousness and school reform and parks and bike lanes and such a walkable, livable city. And then I saw him on MSNBC defending Scott Walker and I was like, oh, yeah, no, that didn't exist either. So, yeah, that's I sort of begrudgingly voted for him because there were areas of change in the city that I liked. I thought there were some elements of smart growth and smart development that I liked. But you know, in the end, I was not wholehearted in it. And I was a firm believer in 06. I was like somebody who was a precinct captain and you know, went out door to door with him in 06. And then, you know, in the last election cycle, I just was not feeling it. You know, probably should have written in faith is what I probably should have done.
Last question: is there anything you'd care to add?
Man, that's a tough one. Look, I actually think that there is a pathway to like have real ed reform in the city, but we have to get out of this sort of idea that it has to be something that focuses on the Northwest Corridor. If you look at like where Ward 2 and 3 are in education reform, you're talking about 75% of the students who go to those schools are in a new school, that the teachers who were tested with impact, majority of those teachers are the highest trained, highest qualified teachers. But that's not the battle lines, because also those are the students who have received some of the highest national test averages in the country. They also have the most national merit scholars. If we're really serious about education reform, then people like me who have two kids who live in the Oyster boundary have to really recognize and identify that the battle lines are, you know, Ward 7, Ward 8, Ward 5, part of Ward 6, and give them the resources, you know, like start focusing on building new schools over there, making sure that the teachers that we're sending over there are teachers who graduated with degrees in those fields. I just think that right now what we've done is we're allowing young college students to come in from Teach for America or DC Teaching Fellows and essentially be the backbone of the teaching corps in Ward 7 and 8, which I don't question those young people's commitment, and I applaud them for coming in and taking on an extremely hard job. But man, we got to like, you know, we got to send in you know, like sort of the right troops into the fight to give it an equal standing. And the other bit is I'm really just bothered by this model that every kid has to go to college. I think that we've done pretty poor job of actually letting people know that there are other ways to like have great, successful, you know, upper middle class existences in the district. And we just keep putting them on a track of like, oh, if you don't want to go to college, you don't amount to anything. And I think it really sort of crushes the spirit of a lot of kids who just sort of recognize in themselves that maybe they aren't destined for college. You know, my hope is that like if we're going to get serious about education reform, that we're going to find a lot of different paths to get to the same goal.
Thanks, Brian Weaver.
Thank you.